Good morning. We are holding Shoftim chapter 6, Perek Vav, and we were discussing last week Sukkim right around Chof Zayin, Chof Ches, where Gidon and 10 men, they take a bull that had been fattened by the people of the town for the last 7 years. They prepared it to bring to as a avodah zarah, the Baal, and Gidon, in the middle of the night, takes this bull, and he takes the mizbeach that they had prepared for the Baal and destroys it, and he rebuilds it as a mizbeach for Hashem, and cuts down the Asherah tree, and uses the wood to bring the karban. And we left off, we were discussing that the Gemara tells us, Drashim also, that there were seven things, or eight things, that that normally were forbidden, that were permitted that evening, as a harasha, a specific, Hashem gave a command, that in just this instance, these things would be permitted. And the Gemara lists them off. They include that it was shchutechut, it was done outside the Mishkan, which I looked into a little bit more, and the Heter Habamos, that which they were allowed to bring Karbanos outside the Mishkan, was only up until the Mishkan was in Shiloh. While it was in Givon and in other places, then they were permitted to bring Karbanos still outside of the Mishkan. Once the Mishkan was in Shiloh, then the Isser to bring Karbanos outside of the Mizbeach had already begun, and the Mishkan was already in Shiloh, so this would normally have been forbidden, but Hashem specifically commanded Gidon to bring the karban outside the Mishkan in this instance. And it was nighttime, and he wasn't a Kohen, and he didn't use the proper vessels, the holy vessels, and instead he used vessels normally designated for Asherah, for Avodah Zarah, and he used the wood from an Asherah, from an Avodah Zarah tree, and this was an animal that was set aside for Avodah Zarah, and it was a Nevad, it was an animal that had been served. So all of these things combined were, all eight things were forbidden, and they were specifically given permission. Gidon was specifically commanded to bring a karban in this manner at this one occasion. And the question we have to wonder is why? What was the purpose of all this? So the Mefarshim give answers. None of them were perfectly clear to me, but I'll try to elaborate on them. So the Malbim says that the reason why he was to do this was lahorosh ki Hashem hu yistam mi Midian, to show that it would be Hashem who redeemed them from Midian. The gam sheyimser nafshel lekadeshim shemaim v'laharoshen mamish v'avodah zarah, as well that he should be moser nefesh to make a kiddush Hashem, and to show that there's no mamish, there's nothing to avodah zarah. So what jumps out at me from the Malbim is these two, the idea of mesiras nefesh, that it would be a special mesiras nefesh sacrifice risk to, you know, sort of in their face, take their animal that they had prepared for Avodah Zarah and use all of their things, all of the Avodah Zarah, their Mizbeach, their Asherah, use all of their things to bring a karbon, would be a greater level of Mesiras Nefesh on behalf of Hashem, and would itself bring special merit. I think it's in a way similar to the karbon Pesach, where we were specifically told there it was actually something that they worshipped, not just what they used to worship, but they were specifically commanded to use the sheep that the Mitzrayim worshipped to show them that there's nothing to their God, and really to get right in their face about it. And so, and the greater Mesiras Nefesh. And so that's true here with Gidon also. A, it was a great Mesiras Nefesh, and also it shows that there's nothing to their plans to worship Avodah Zarah in this way. He would show them that, look, I'm using this for to serve Hashem, and nothing's going to happen to me because of that. Your God isn't going to be able to respond in any way. It would really show them who's boss. The Ralbag says similar, but I think the Ralbag is focusing more on Gidon. Gidon grew up in this town. His father seemingly was involved in the Avodah Zarah. He himself most likely, definitely according to some Mefarshim, had been involved in serving the Baal. And so it was for himself to do the opposite, to take what he had grown up with and be Mekadesh and use it for the opposite purpose. And what's that?
Be involved in it?
Definitely according to some. To turn it around and to the opposite of what he had grown up with and what they had thought, and to really drum home that an emunah in Hashem, that I'm going to take what I used to believe in and instead designate it for Hashem, that was the purpose of doing it in this fashion.
But part of the reason why I do think this is
because it looks like a Avodah Zarah, or
I mean, that's the practice of that.
I think it's already like it's like contaminated in a way. Like, you're not allowed to get any hana from something that was served for Avodah Zarah. You can't eat it. Not because it's going to look like
right,
you're...
No, but I mean, like, you know, you do that, and then all these other things that you did wrong, right? I think like, part of the reason why they're prohibited in the first place is because that's how they offer up animals when they do the Avodah Zarah, right? I mean, I'm assuming that's...
I'm not sure. Nighttime, I'm not sure. Just that in the Beis HaMikdash, all the karbanos are brought during the day. I'm not sure why, but some of these ideas fit better with, you know, the specific, like, Avodah Zarah, why he used Avodah Zarah, why he used Asherah. It doesn't necessarily explain so well why he had to do it, why he did it at night. That was also a practical thing. The Pasuk describes that he did it at night because he was scared to do it during the day. So, but seemingly that was permitted, not sure. What's that?
Insufficient interior illumination.
When to do it? Yeah, but why? No, that's why they didn't do it in the Beis HaMikdash.
You're dealing with animals and sharp knives.
It could be. Just to add one more idea to the mix, special for you, the Rama Mipano. The Rama Mipano in his sefer on Gilgulei Neshama, on Gilgulim. So he says that this bull, this par that Gidon brought as a carbon, was a Gilgul of Chem ben Chamar. That he explains that Gidon came from the tribe of Menasseh. Menasseh is a descendant of Yosef. So Yosef was married to Asnath Bas Potipharah, and we know from Midrashim that she was only adopted by Potipharah, but she was really the child of Shem and Dinah. She was the product of Shem and Dinah, and she therefore had this contamination in her from Shem, that she was a descendant of Shem, and therefore all of Yosef's descendants were from Shem as well. And in some way, this was a tikkun, this was a reparation of that, to bring the par that was a gilgul of Shem as a karbon for a descendant of Menasseh, a descendant of Yosef. To bring it as a karbon was a tikkun of that contamination, to somehow get rid of that, and by bringing the karbon that was a gilgul of Shem.
If it was offered to Hashem.
What's that?
If it was offered to Hashem, not
right,
to Baal.
Right. So that's another reason, perhaps, why he had to bring this animal as a carbon, even if it had been prepared for Avodah Zarah, and even if it had been worshipped. Won't explain all the other things, but at least this, we can explain that it was this car, this bull, he had to bring this bull as a carbon in order to be misaki in that. I don't think so. I don't think we do tikkunim for Shem. Right. Okay.
I guess
that fits in there with the concept there that if you're Russian, you can come back as an animal.
Yes. He definitely believes in that, if you look in the Ramami Pana. Okay. If we look at Pasuk Lamed Beis, so after Gidon's father comes to his defense, so in Pasuk Lamed Beis it says, Vayikro lo vayomahu Yerubaal lemor, and on that day he called him Yerubaal, saying, Yarev bo habaal, the Baal will fight him, he not at his mizbecho, for he has destroyed his mizbeach, he has destroyed his the altar of the Baal. The Mefarshim take different approaches as to who is calling him Yerubaal. The Malbim learns that it was his father. Gidon's father was calling him Yerubaal, that he's fighting the Baal and he's denying it. And again, at this point it seems that even Yoash, Gidon's father, had come around to Gidon's side. And in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, he had defended Gidon and said, look, if the Baal was real, he would fight Gidon, right, if he was a real force. And now he's calling Gidon Yerubaal, he'll fight the Baal. This Baal is nothing, he doesn't have any power. That's how the Malbim explains his name, Yerubaal, that he will fight against the Baal. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, which we touched on earlier in this parak, quotes a pasuk later in Shmuel, where Shmuel says that Hashem, he's describing all of the saviors that Hashem sent on behalf of the Jewish people, and he says, "Vayishlach Hashem es Yerubaal ve'es Bidon." He sent Yerubaal, who we know now is Gidon, and Bidon, who refers to Shimshon, ve'es Yiftach, ve'es Shmuel. And he lists off a number of different people, but he refers to Gidon as Yerubaal. The Gemara tells us, Yerubaal, she'asa meriv le'im ha'baal, because he battled against the Baal. And the Marsha there points out that, you know, we don't need the Gemara to tell us this, really it's an explicit pasuk here, that they called him Yerubaal, and that was Gidon's name. And we'll see, he'll be referred to that again in the next parak. The very first pasuk in Parak Zion says, "Vayashkim Yerubaal, who Gidon? Yerubaal woke up, he's Gidon, that's Gidon." But the Marsha says that the people of the town had called him Yerubaal as an insult, sort of, that the Baal will fight against him, he'll exact his revenge against him, that it was the people of the town who had designated him as Yerubaal. But Shmuel HaNavi also calls him Yerubaal. Obviously not in the same, in the same connotation, with a negative connotation as an insult, but rather as a praise, similar to the way the Malbim is learning this pasuk, that he was saying that, who asa meriv le'im ha'baal, he fought against the Baal, he's a yarev bo ha'baal, the Baal will fight him, but he'll fight the Baal. And so it was, this name can be looked at in a negative connotation, but also in a positive connotation as the one who will battle, who fights against the Baal. That's what he did. He destroyed the Mizbeach of the Baal and brought a carbon and took the animal that was supposed to be brought as a carbon to the Baal and brought it as a carbon to Hashem. So I don't know if he doesn't pose it as a question in that way. He just points it out that, you know, it's already a pasuk. I think what he's more bothered by is he understood the psukim to be using it in a negative connotation, a negative light, and therefore he bothered, why is Shmuel referring to him in the same way, calling him Yerubaal? And so he's answering that it has both connotations, that although the townspeople called him that in a negative connotation, but Shmuel called him that in a positive connotation. Right. So then the Marsha seems to understand that was either Yoash or the townspeople, not necessarily, but whoever it was in a negative light. Which really, I think, the simple understanding of the words are, do imply that Yarev bo habaal, the Baal will battle him. So in the context, it could be just Yoash saying that after he said, you know, let the Baal fight him, Yarabal Abal, the Baal will fight him, but we know that he's not going to do anything because he's powerless. But it can also be understood as like a curse, you know, the Baal is going to fight him, the Baal will take him down, and either Yoash or the townspeople would be the one saying that.
Did he destroy the Baal?
There is no Baal. Baal is just an Avodah Zarah. He destroyed the Mizbeach, and he destroyed the Asherah tree, but he didn't actually, there was no Baal to actually do anything.
I'm saying, he destroyed what they thought was the Baal.
No, they didn't think it was the Baal. He took what they planned to use to worship the Baal and use that as the service of Hashem.
They didn't have a specific idol?
I don't think so, but I don't know. Or it could be that there was a specific idol, but it wasn't even there. It wasn't in their town. It could be. Okay, let's continue in the Pesukim. Pasuk Lamed Gimel. V'chol Midyan v'Amalek uvnei Kedem ne'esu yachtav. And all of Midyan, Amalek, and the people of Kedem, they gathered Vayavru Vayachnu v'Emek Yisrael, and they crossed and they encamped in the valley of Yisrael. Vayavru, and they crossed the Yarding, and they encamped in Eretz Yisrael. The Rabbah says, in order to destroy Bnei Yisrael, they were going to bring a great force and wipe them out or do great damage. Pasuk Ramadalad, V'ruach Hashem lov shoef Sidon. And a spirit of Hashem adorned Sidon, Vayiska b'shofar, and he blew a shofar, Vayizoik Aviezer Acharav, and the people of Aviezer, the family of Aviezer, the people of his town, gathered after him. They rallied, they all of a sudden rallied to his cause. Ruach Hashem, or Ruach of Gevurah, the Mepharshim say, a great strength adorned him. Umalachim Shalach Tachol Menasseh. And he sent messengers in all of Menasseh, Vayizayik Amu Acharav, and they were also gathered after him. Umalachim Shalach the Asher of Zivulun of Naphtali. And he sent messengers to the tribes of Zivulun and of Asher, Zivulun and Naphtali, which I assume were neighboring tribes. I didn't look on a map. Vayalu, we crossed them, and they all went up to greet them, and he gathered a sizable force. Vayomer Gidon Elohim Elohim, and Gidon said to Hashem, or to a Malach who was there, in Yeshko Moshiach Biyadi Yesh Yisrael Kaser Dibarta. If you are able to save Bnei Yisrael as you spoke, as you told me you would, I'm going to ask for another sign. Hinei Anochi Matzi Gezkizas Hashem Rebadorim. Behold, I am going to place a piece of wool in the Doren, dressing floor. Impal Yiyal Hagiza Levada. If in the morning there's dew only on the piece of wool, the Alkola are its chorev, but on all the land it's dry. The Yodati, then I will know, Kisoshia Biyadi Yisro Kasher Dibarta, then I will know that you are going to save Bnei Yisrael by my hand as you had spoken.
So to himself or to everybody?
As far as I know, it's just himself. He's looking for a sign. We'll have to see why he's asking for another sign. But the sign that he's asking for is that in the morning, he's going to lay out a piece of wool, and if in the morning it is wet with dew and the ground is dry, that will be the sign that Hashem is going to truly save Bnei Yisrael. I'm not sure. We'll talk about what the Mepharshim say and then see how that fits into what you're asking. Vayehi chein, and it was so. Vayashkem imachara. And it was so, as in the scene that it happened. And he woke up in the morning, Vayazar es hagiza, and he smushed the piece of wool, the yimet tal min hagiza, and the dew dripped from the wool, nilo hasefa mayim, enough to fill up an entire trough with water. But he's not done. Vayomer Gidon Elo Elohim, and Gidon said to Hashem, or to the Malach, Al Yichar Ap Chobi, don't be angry with me. I have one more request. Vadabro Achapam, I'm going to ask one more time. Anase no Rakapam Bagiza, I'm going to do another test one more time with the wool. Yihina Chorev El Hagiza Levada. This time I want that the giza, the piece of wool, should be dry, and the ground should be full of dew. It should be the opposite, that the wool should be dry and the ground should be wet.
Anybody say why we're using wool?
I don't think so. I'm not sure.
What should happen?
It's a good question. It's a good question. We'll see. We'll get a little bit of an inkling, I think, into why that. Good question, and we'll see. I think you'll hear a satisfying answer. Vayas Elohim came b'layva ahu. Last pasuk in the parak, and Hashem did so that night. Vayichorev al hagiza levada, and there the giza, the wool itself was dry. Val kol haaretz hayatal, and all the land was full of dew. So the sign comes to fruition, and that's the end of the parak.
The same wool are you? That'd be even a big
I assume not, but I mean, maybe he squeezed it out. I don't know. I don't think it makes a difference. If it was the same one, I assume it was dry by now. So, okay, so let's just get, first we'll do different layers. We'll do just Rashi's, what Rashi says here, and then we'll go a little bit deeper. So Rashi, first of all, tells us, if you look in Pasuk Lamed Chet, so how does it describe what happened after the first sign? It says, Vayichen, and it was so. And he woke up in the morning and he squeezed out the wool. Compare that with Pasuk Mem, where it describes what happened. It says, Vayichorev el hagizo levada, and there was wool, there was dryness only on the wool, but on the land there was dew. So there it actually says, describes that what actually happened, that what he had described actually happened. But in Pasuk Lamed Ches, it does not. So Rashi tells us that it was not, in fact, dry on the land after the first sign. He asked for a sign, let it be that the land will be dry and the wool will be wet. What actually happened was they were both wet. However, the wool was much more wet. Why did it have to happen that way? Because Rashi tells us, "Bris krusa l'tal she'eino netzer." The Gemara tells us in Tainan, Hashem makes a bris, makes a covenant that tal will never stop. There will always be dew, as opposed to rain. There isn't always rain, but dew there will always be. And therefore, it couldn't be. It would be a break from that bris, that covenant, to not have tal. So instead, the fulfillment of the sign was that the ground would be a little bit wet, but the wool would be very wet, and that's why I think that's the significance of squeezing it out. That would show just how wet it was, wet enough to fill up a trough with water. So I don't know how big the piece of wool was, but it would seem that was miraculous.
Why
very good. So some of the Farshim say, right, very simply, that's why he wanted another sign, because it wasn't completely fulfilled the first time.
That is the way Rashi seems to be, like, even though there was a lot of water on it, it seems like within Teva, because naturally wool would absorb water more than one hard grass.
Okay, good. So the Malbim basically says something along those lines. Malbim has two approaches. One is more of a practical approach, and one is a explanation of the two signs, what they represent. So we'll do that now. So Malvin says, first of all, why would he asking for a sign? You're not even allowed to ask for a sign if Hashem is strong enough to save that you're not allowed to do. So what was he asking for? So, says the Malbim, he wanted to know if his own zechus would be enough, if his own merit would be enough for the salvation of all of Israel. Because, while he may have been Makari, the people of his town, turned them away from the Baal, but the service of Avodah Zarah was rampant in Bnei Yisrael at this time, and therefore he believed that there was no zechus in the Klal Yisrael, and that the zechus, the merit would have to come from him, and he therefore wondered, would his merit be enough? That was what he was asking for a sign for. Would his merit be enough to save Bnei Yisrael? We'll see in a moment how that fits in to the signs that he actually asked for. But before we do that, to get back to your point, the Malbim says, why did he ask for two signs? His first explanation is, along the lines of what you were saying, that because he just sort of made a mistake in terms of his calculation of how it should play out, the Malbim says at first he thought that there should be more dew on the ground because the ground is cold and it would hold the wet, damp towel dew for longer. And then he decided the opposite, that no, the wool is more absorbent and more spongy, and it would draw the dew towards it, the wetness. And so his first sign asking that the wool should be more wet wasn't such a good idea. After all, let me do it the opposite, he said. It makes more sense. It's a greater miracle if it would be the opposite. If the absorbent wool would be dry and the ground would remain wet, that would be a greater miracle. Then the Malbim says that they actually fit in to what he was asking about. Again, he was asking for a sign because he wasn't sure if the zechus of Klal Yisrael would be enough to, if his own zechus would be enough to save Bnei Yisrael. So therefore, he said like this: Tal represents the shefa, the bracha coming from Hashem that comes milamala, that comes from on high. It represents bracha from Hashem. So therefore, he said, if there would be tau on the wool alone, the wool represents a gidon, the ground would represent Bnei Yisrael. If there would be tau on the wool alone, even though everywhere else is torah, everywhere else is dry, as in if there's enough merit in me, myself, to have shefa, to get this bracha from Hashem, which is represented by tau, and even if the rest of the ground is dry, if I myself can draw down that tau, then that would show that I have enough zechus to save all of Klal Yisrael. Then I'll know. If I myself, in my own merit, can draw down the tau, then I'll know that Hashem can bring salvation, will bring salvation just for my own merit. So that was the first sign. The second sign that he asked for was that, although this one is also a little bit difficult because we already talked about him asking earlier when he met with the Malach and asked for a sign from the Malach, that was to know, one of the Malach's approaches was to know if it would be in a miraculous fashion. He wanted to know how the salvation would come about. Would it be in a miraculous fashion or not? And that's the approach that the Malach takes again. He wanted to know, okay, so I have enough zechus. I may have enough merit, but do I have enough merit that the salvation should come in a miraculous fashion without having to fight or with a small army, or will we need a proper army and a proper battle in order to fight Midian? And so he said, I'm going to test one more time if my zechus is enough to make a miracle. So that was the second sign. And the second sign, he asked for something that was completely contrary to nature. That the, like we mentioned in the first sign, so there was tau on the ground, and there was tau in the wool. Everything was sort of natural. Maybe the wool was more saturated, but everything was basically al derech hateva in a natural way. The second time that the wool would not absorb any liquid, that would be above nature, and that would be a sign for him that not only do I have enough merit to bring about a salvation for Bnei Yisrael, but I even have enough merit for it to come about in a miraculous fashion, as would be displayed by the miracle of having tau having dew without any of it absorbing into the wool. Okay, that I think that fits in very nicely. No, right, I think they do make that point. You know what? You're mechaving. It's a medrash. Very good. The medrash says it exactly like that. The medrash says... The medrash says, Hispel Menasa Begiza, he began to perform a test with the wool. Shenemar Anasen Araka Pam Begiza, I'm going to test, I'm going to try with this wool. Maxiv, what does it say? It says, Vayihi Thein, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Miyachid Shemosham. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not Miyachid his name there, he didn't put his name on that, he didn't put his stamp on that. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, the whole world is in tzara, is in pain, and I'm going to put my name there. This medrash, I think, may understand that it in fact was chorev on the land, but Hashem didn't want to. So since it was chorev, and in order to make this sign, everyone else had to suffer, no dew anywhere. So Hashem wasn't going to miyachid his name there, as opposed to the second time. The Shasha Amar, when he said that the chorev should be, that the dryness should be on the wool. So there, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ho'ol v'tal menasev ha'olam t'nechem, since there's tal coming down and the world is going to be happy, Ayachei t'ni, that's where I'll put my name, Shenemar, as it says, Vayach Elokim t'ein b'raila hu, and Elokim did that on that night. So the Medrash makes this point. The Medrash, this Medrash seems to be holding that it was really dry in the world, and that's why Hashem didn't put his name there. But you're making a very good diuk that we can say the same thing according to this other approach, the approach of other midrashim and Rashi, that the that there wasn't as much of a miracle, it was more natural the first time, and therefore it didn't say Hashem's name there, even though there certainly was something miraculous in that the wool was so wet, but Hashem didn't put his name there, as opposed to the second time, which was certainly an open miracle, that there was no wetness on the wool whatsoever, there Hashem puts his name. To relate them. Just coming back to this idea of the tau, so I saw someone bring down the Mishpat Zov, the great Sefer Hanavi, he brings down from the Yaro Shabbat, and the only thing I've seen, an idea that really connects beautifully into this idea of the tau and the Malbim, that the difference between rain and dew, again, he's writing in the 1700s, I'm no scientist myself, but he is that, this is my own interpretation of what he's saying, basically that rain is on the ground, the water is on the ground, it evaporates, it forms clouds, and then it rains again, as opposed to dew, which would come from liquid that's already in the atmosphere, condensation in the air itself. So he says, therefore, in some way, somehow, rain may be specific to certain weather conditions that depends on the ground is too dry, then there won't be any liquid to evaporate and form rain, as opposed to tile, there's always going to be liquid in the air. And he says that he's discussing tshuva, and he says that when it comes to tshuva, he says Klal Yisrael. He's talking about the Gemara in Tainus, actually, that talks about the dew. Klal Yisrael thought that without Ubza Delatata, without a tshuva from down here, there Hashem wouldn't be Mashpia on us from above. And therefore, they asked, like Hashem, you should be like Geshem to us, you should be like rain. That when we sort of, you know, send something up, so then you should send something back down. And Hashem in that Gemara responds, you want me to be like rain, I'm going to be like something even better, something that's all the time, I'm going to be like tau, I'm going to be like dew. And that, it doesn't take anything, a uvda mitzvotata, a historic from down here, it doesn't require that for Hashem to be my shpia. Hashem responds that I can be my shpia on you even without, you know, the evaporation of the liquid that makes the rain. I could be like tau. I could come even without that, even without anything from down below, even without any merit. I can still be mashpia on you. So that's the idea of dew, that tau represents the shefa from Hashem that can come without our merit, without anything coming from down here. And so it fits in very well with what's going on by us, because really what Gidon is asking is, you know, the people don't have merit. He's asking maybe my merit to be enough, or even maybe without any merit, the people don't have merit, they're over the Avodah Zarah. Will the Tau still come down? Will there still be dew despite the lack of merit? And if and Tau represents the idea that Hashem can still be Mashpia, can still reward, can still shower us with bracha, even in a situation where we don't truly merit it. That's why Gidon was asking for a sign with Tau, with Du, asking despite their lack of merit, Hashem will still be Mashpia, will still come and bring about our salvation.